You're listening to Arsenal Pass, a flesh and blood podcast for players by players, and all about strategy, leveling up, and the latest news in the world of Wraith. Welcome to Arsenal Pass.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to episode 152 of Arsenal Pass.
For the past 2 weeks, I know I've done the lead-ins. One was a completely accident because it was an accident because I deleted that footage. I've solved the issue. Don't worry. I know about SSDs. I've got them. My file paths are not set up. Anyway, Hayden joins me this week. Hayden, how's your week in Flesh and Blood been / your week in just, I don't know, life at this point?
Yeah, it's good to finally be on the intro of the pod, Bryn. So thank you for having me on to the
my guest Hayden Dale. I got my guest Hayden Dale here.
For the Arsenal Pass pre-show. It's really nice to be on finally. You know, it's been a few weeks. week in Flesh and Blood's been good. Obviously, Pro Tour is by the time... Well, right now, as a recording, it's like basically leave in 2 weeks, just over 2 weeks. So just trying to really nail down what I'm going to play at the Pro Tour. I think for me, you know, I wanted to like lock on Reiner. That was kind of my goal. I think I'm like close to it, but this meta is actually evolving a lot. And I think my understanding of this meta game with just so many heroes, and I honestly, not just mine, but I think everyone's sort of understanding is really evolving. So I have been spending the last kind of like 5 days just throwing stuff at the wall and seeing if there's something that's maybe a bit of an outlier that could be just a really good percentage pick into what I expect the meta game to be, but honestly not really finding it. So I don't know. I think it's either play the best deck or play something that you think you have a bit of an edge with. Or if you can find that meta spread, which we're going to... Main topic of the pod, talking to Peter Budensek, right? Talking about a particular pair that might have that good matchup spread. I don't know. And then otherwise, just drafting. I know it got cut out of the pod because you hate me, but head to a Road to Nationals 2 weeks ago, draft Road to Nationals, which managed to pick up the dub. And then last weekend played a classic constructed one, played with Reiner, lost in top eight. So just played a couple of internationals, obviously locked up the invite, which is nice for nationals, and now just testing. Yeah. How are you?
I think I'm... we talked to Peter Budensek today. Peter plays a little bit of Kano, surprise. Yeah, I'm probably gonna play Kano or KO. That's like the big meme, is that everybody's locked on KA*O. I think that ultimately, due to the context of the metagame, the viability of the deck, and a lot of my friends being like, this is the time, I'll probably play Kano. I don't know. I have the deck sleeves up. It's all ready to go. Sasha's coming here in person. Whenever me and Sasha get together in person, there is like this, the Holy Spirit of Kano that like works its way into that to that time. So I don't know. I'm thinking it's going to be Kano. Could also be KO. We have a really solid KO deck. I don't think I'm going to swap to like... I think it's very unlikely I play a Victor or a Dramai or something of that, or a Kasai, something of that nature. I just don't want to be doing that this late in the process. Those decks, they seemed very powerful in testing. They seemed good, but they didn't seem good enough to take me off of KO, or good enough to stop me from making a bad decision audibling to Kano. So those are probably off my plate for now. In other news, I think I got the worst haircut of my life today, which is why I look like...
I was about to say something, dude.
I look like a budget Cillian Murphy, which is, I mean, shit.
Killian Murphy?
Yeah, whatever. I don't know how to say it, but like, you want to check... you guys, audio listeners, I apologize, you're going to miss out, but hey, you want to see the back? It's fucked.
Yeah, go on then. I've seen the sides. It's not great.
It's bad. So basically, the story is I went to a really cheap haircut place, and it's incredible how someone could be so bad at cutting
hair.
They
paid you, or?
Yeah, they should have at this rate. It was so bad. It was like the worst I've ever gotten. I was like, you know what? Shit, I'm going to fix it myself. So, of course.
Oh, no.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Anyway, I'm going to turn around now. Go easy on me.
Oh, no. Oh, it's not even straight.
Hey, we can still work on it after the pod, you know? Like...
Just take the clippers, just go straight to a number two.
Yeah, I felt like I needed the handicap. I was too handsome, so shit. I'll live with it. Anyway, let's talk about our sponsor. Our sponsor this week is Magnolia Games. They've been sponsoring the pod for a few weeks now. You've heard the spiel before, but I'll hit it again. You know, if you're looking to go to the Pro Tour, you need updates for your Classic Constructed deck, check them out, magnoliagames.com. Boxes of heavy hitters, draft is part of the format at the Pro Tour. Hit them up. Could be practicing for Road to Nationals as well, or just cracking a box for fun. Magnolia Games is the place to go for that. And they got gold foils, cold foils. They got a buy list function at every single Flesh and Blood event. Check out their booth. Good friends of the pod. And if you do, go to magnoliagames.com. Use code ARSENAL10 to let them know you came from the podcast. Let's get into it, Hayden.
Let's get straight into it. Pretty light news this week, Brendan. We covered a lot of things last week. Obviously, the kind of big hangover thing that I just want to kind of mention, I mean, hangover in terms of what I want to talk about in the pod again this week, is just Calling in Tokyo, and of course, the world premiere for Path of the Mistvale. Super exciting. If you haven't already checked out that news, go and check it out on fabtcg.com. But we have a bit of a giveaway. Speaking of Battle Hardens, that's why I got a little bit confused there. Battle Harden Kiel is happening this month. Is the week before the Pro Tour. If you're out in Germany or you're out in Europe, maybe you're traveling via that way, or you know, you're just going to be going there for the event, or you want to go for the event. Well, we have a ticket to give away, entry to the Battle Hardened. All you have to do is comment on this pod and let us know. We talk a lot about in the main topic about which deck people might want to play or what they might want to lock into for this PT. If you were heading to the PT, or you know, maybe you are heading to the PT, or you're heading to the Calling, or whatever, what deck would you play and why? That's what we want to know on the pod this week. And everyone who enters will put you in the entry for this Battle Hardened Kiel.
Let's make it fun. I have an idea.
All right, go on.
So it's what deck would you play for the PT? Wrong answers only. Give us like the give us a shit idea, but explain it in like a legitimate way. Like tell us why you would play
Brainstorm Kano. Yeah. Let's go.
Tell us why you'd play Kano. Tell us why you'd play Bolton. Tell us why you'd whip out the Riptide. Give us the matchup spread. Tell us the math. Like, break it down. Like, just use statistics in the most devious way possible, or numbers in the most devious way possible, to sell us the dream on bad decks to get entered.
I almost lost to a Riptide at my Classic Constructed Roach Nationals on Saturday.
Mm-hmm. I mean, yeah. It happens.
That's the reasoning. Come on, Cookout. Let's get into it. YouTube comment section this week. Going to kick it off with a nice spicy one for you, Brendan. We've got Yannick BKS. Why are you not inviting good players from Europe on the pod? Why not the world champion? It sometimes seems like you're echoing with the same players all the time. I don't mean it to be disrespectful, but we could maybe benefit from some fresh EU air. To be fair, Brendan, before you answer this question, we have had Tarek on the pod a few times, but we do, there is a particular reason we like to bring Tarek on the pod, and it's to laugh at him usually. No, it's Tarek is like, I think, someone who's one of the most articulate people when it comes to explaining concepts in Flesh and Blood, and especially when it comes to the current metagame, and that's why we like to bring Tarek on. But I'll let you handle this question, Brendan, because I think this is maybe a little bit unfair.
Why are you not inviting good players from Europe on the pod? You're right. We only have bad ones, like Pablo Pintor. We only take the bad ones. It's just funny, right? I think that people don't appreciate that some of the people that we have on the podcast are, people we know. I mean, we're not like a news media company. Like, a lot of these people are our friends, people that we interact with. But also, we do have people from Europe on the pod. And Yuha has his own section. Like, the fuck? It was just such a... I understand the sincerity of this comment, but I also think it's weirdly timed because, we have a European that has their own content section on the channel at this point.
If you haven't checked that out, go and check out Yuha doing Limited Time Only. Yuha's been doing an amazing job, by the way. The kind of level of detail in these, if you want to learn how to draft these heroes and heavy hitters, Yuha's content is like... Honestly, it's the best limited content I think that's been produced for Flesh and Blood so far. So go and check it out. Look, I obviously we've got Yuha doing Limited Time Only on the pod. We have had the likes of Pablo and a few other Europeans join us on the pod. Look, I think we could do a little bit more, I will say. I think we could have, you know, I agree, Brendan. We've had some Europeans on the pod. I would like to have more. I would love to make that happen. Time zone is definitely something that's a bit more challenge. But you know what? I'm going to commit that this year we will have some more Europeans on the pod. I've been reaching out to my friends. But Bartosz, where are you at? Come on the pod. Come on, my friend.
You're coordinating three time zones, all vastly different from one another. Honestly, we try to cover it up. We try to put sprinkles on it. But the real reason is just like all the EU players are bad. No, I'm kidding.
As if.
I'm kidding. We'll
strongest
see.
Region, as we'll we know.
Yeah,
world champions, Pro Tour champions. Wait, has there been a... Michael Feng was the first US Pro Tour champion? Is that right?
Matthew Fox, Pablo Pintor, Michael Feng, yes.
There's one we're missing, surely. There's only been three Pro Tours.
Pro Tour Baltimore, Pro Tour Lille, Pro Tour New York.
Wow. Okay, well, let's see who wins LA. Handman215, taking Kano to an RTN this weekend. Will post results on my channel and this post. I mean, there was no comments on this post when I checked yesterday. So either Handman215 had a bad run or they just forgot to let us know. But we'd love to know. Let us know how you went, Handman. TheSchnitzler77, how do we view the change to the LL system now? I think they should revert the changes and take away the extra points. This is interesting. I think this is not... common discourse, I think, in terms of the changes to the LL system. They happened, they kind of went, I wouldn't say unnoticed, but they kind of, the discourse quietened down very quickly. But we're in this road to national season, and it looks like nothing's going to LL during the season because the strength of some of the new heroes in particular. But, you know, there's some heroes that are close. I don't know, like, I think the fact that they just printed five new class constructed heroes makes me think that the change to the Living Legend system was, you know, as we had thought, was because of new heroes coming in. And I don't know, I'm okay with it, honestly. I think the extra points and the way it's shaking out at the moment kind of makes sense to me. As much as Living Legend makes sense to me.
Yeah, I was going to say, how's that weapon, Living Legend, make sense to you?
Well, don't worry about that. Oren Hammerquist, 9852. With the upcoming ninja set, what do you think about Dishonored Kaltsu? Granted, it's pretty telegraphed, but a Dishonored KO is a weak deck. Same with most heroes, except Dash. What are the chances this becomes a valid choice?
Honest answer, I don't know. But secondary answer is that Peter actually talks a lot about KO on this podcast. Talks about potentially innovating and yeah, that's what I meant.
Yeah, so many K heroes.
They said KO is like, yeah, but talks a lot about Kaltsu innovating the deck and where its potential future evolutions are. So stay tuned to hear that.
Yeah, I think Dishonored Kaltsu, like if there's a format where every hero needs to utilize their hero ability, you know, like that is scary. You know, can you use things like Mask of the Pouncing Lynx to make sure you can go get a Dishonored? Yeah, I mean, you know, you can obviously play attack reactions. Like, I think if you really want to connect with a Dishonored against a lot of decks, it's not going to be that hard for you if you build your deck that way. So I don't know, it could be a real thing, right? Like, that is a powerful, like, turning off the hero ability for the rest of the game is a really powerful thing to do. Obviously you just need to make sure that then you can, the value of your deck outcompetes just the cards in your opponent's deck, which with the amount of guardians and stuff like that around right now, maybe it's not as viable, but we'll see. Bruno Lana, 9170. So many people have numbers, and they're not even like years. The Brute match is really different for Prism, but Guardian isn't. Should watch the match to see. This, I picked out this comment actually because
they meant difficult.
Difficult. Okay, people talk in like non-boomer language and I don't understand, Brendan. I'm an old man. Right, the Brute matchup is really difficult for Prism, but Guardian isn't. Yeah, I mean, I've watched a lot of Prism in the past week, actually, because there was a few people on the testing group playing Prism, trying to understand how it works. And, you know, that ALS loop combo, if you haven't seen that, you can basically infinitely loop an Arclight Sentinel to kind of lock your opponent out of the game. So you have an infinite combo with Prism. Actually is not that hard to pull off, to be honest, and I can see why Guardian wouldn't be that bad. Like, you can set up an aura plan differently. Brute being difficult, yeah, it did look like Brute was quite difficult for Prism. Prism is a lot more real than I thought it was. I'll be honest, I think that deck is like at least tier 3. Yeah, maybe tier 2.5. like that deck is actually pretty real.
Yeah, I don't think that tier 3 is very high alkaloid. Like, I think that people are putting it up like in like tier 1.5, like close to tier 1.
No, but it's better than Riptide. It's better than...
Yeah, for sure.
I think it might be a better deck than like Bolton, for instance. just let's stoke the fire some more.
I think so too. I think the deck is actually pretty legit. We played it.
Yeah, it's scary.
My pushback was that I was like, okay, the Brute matchup seems terrible.
Like, I also think it dies to itself.
Yeah, people were telling me, they're like, oh yeah, you just don't know how to play it. Yeah, the Brute matchup isn't that bad. I'm like, okay. I believe it on the Guardian matchup. Just playing the more aura game plan, it kind of makes sense. But yeah, I just don't think the Brute matchup is good, and inserting a 32 life and having the most represented deck in the metagame be your dog too, it's like, nah, not me this time. Not me this time. But in the future, when Kanu gets banned after we all take it to Pro Tier wins, then maybe.
Here's a question for you. Do you think Brute is going to be more represented than Guardian at the Pro Tour?
I don't know. It's tough. Because our internal testing and our internal rhetoric seems to be not representative of like Twitter or even some of the Road to National data, especially the early Road to National data. So I haven't talked to a single testing group yet. I haven't talked to a single testing group or player that you know, is in my circle and that I respect highly that doesn't think that KO is the deck to beat. You know, maybe there's decks that are close in that margin of competing for the best deck, but most people say KO is the litmus test, KO is the best deck, and KO is what we measure everything else against. I feel like that's not a hard conclusion to come to. I really don't. It seems like a lot of people came to that conclusion pretty early and they've maintained it for weeks now. Maybe there's some flip-flopping. Maybe some people have found like, okay, Kasai, we want to play Kasai, or we want to play Jermai, but yeah, I'd be surprised if KO is not the most played deck, but then again, I think that Guardian would be a close second. So if they flip in terms of one and two, it is what it is.
Yeah, I think it's KO and Victor for me in terms of the two decks to beat if you're starting your testing or whatever it might be.
Yeah, the Victor came full circle. Hey, no, I got memed so fucking hard for propping up Victor based off the value prop, and he's doing a lot better now. Like, he came out week one a little cold, and then he's just doing better and better and better.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Well, you can, you know, shove them in their faces. Matt Pollitt, 215. Hard drives are cheap, Brendan. Get a 2 terabyte internal SSD.
Yeah, I've actually got them. I've got M.2s and stuff, but it was just the file pathing for some, like, where my files get, like, where they get placed after OBS. I just haven't switched the file path yet. So it's never been an issue in like 300 episodes, but yeah, it was an issue last week.
152.
No, what? 300, including other pods.
Oh, right.
Other podcast episodes. Right.
Then we got a couple of comments about Bolton, and I know you were engaging with some comments around kind of the value of Bolton. Is there anything else you want to say? I'm not going to read through all these Bolton comments, but is there anything else you want to say about Bolton? We can put our discourse on Bolton to bed for now, maybe, if you want to. Do you want to put a cap on it?
All I asked was, like, just explain the value prop, the matchup spread, and the math, and like the quantitative math. I know it's a bingo word for everybody, but like, just give me the turn cycle math. Like, tell me why to play Bolton. What is the value proposition over other decks in the format? And if the turn cycle math does not exceed 14 consistently, then it's a hard sell against KO, in my opinion. And I don't think it does. So people might think we shit on Bolton harder than we're doing. Like, yeah, maybe we use some aggressive language when talking about Bolton, but I just think that I think Bolton right now is a X percent worse deck than some of the tier one decks, to where there is pretty much no reason to play at the Pro Tour. That's my opinion. That's my opinion from testing, and maybe I'm under tested on the deck, whatever, but that is my opinion on the deck, is there is no compelling reason for me to play Bolton right now.
Yeah, and I think that's fine. I think the context to that is that there's probably like 5 decks that are compelling to play at the Pro Tour. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's not, and I think it's good to have context. Like, I definitely don't think Bolton is in the bottom half of decks in the metagame right now. Well, you know, of all the heroes in Classic Constructed.
It's just Bolton blood. Players in the bottom half of players.
Oh my goodness.
I'm joking. Right. Relax out there. Relax.
Well, on that note, Brendan, I think it might be time to bring someone in to even out the discourse in this pod. Why don't we bring in a friend?
Let's get it. And on to the main topic with Peter Budinsek. Peter, for the people who may have not heard of you yet, can you give us a little bit of a background on your history in Flesh and Blood, your history of, I don't know, a player of decks? You know, I know you started out as a ninja player. That's how I met you. You were a Ninja 5 player, I think, at the time. Actually, me and Peter met at the Calling Cincinnati in a Battle Hardened, Sunday Battle Hardened, yep. And I was playing my Tall Briar deck for the first time, and I paired into Peter on Dash. We had an incredibly close game at that. But after that, I met you a few more times, being a bit of a Phi truther, and then something happened in between that time and the modern day where you started hitting that copium, and you are basically the part of the Kano Council. I mean, I don't think anybody would refute that. I mean, you sit atop the throne. But anyway, I said, give us some of your history, and I gave you some history, but I'll let you take it.
Yeah, 100%. Started playing Flesh and Blood like right after, like right when like most of the US came back from COVID, like late Crucible, like 2 weeks before, I knew Monarch was coming out, and like a month I started playing, and really wasn't playing too much back then. I was playing like Katsu in Blitz because I didn't know Iron existed until the first like armor I ever went to, and then played a little bit. I was a like Katsu CC enjoyer for a long time, into playing Chain, and then played a lot of Dash, played Dash at the first US Nationals, and then turned into playing a lot of Phi. Right when like Phi came out, after PT2, played a lot of Phi, and then won a Battle Hardened on Fi, where I talked to you for a lot of it at Battle Hardened Dallas, won with the Blossom of Spring Fi deck right before Worlds, and then played. I was playing Kano off and on, mostly in Blitz, and then I won a Battle Hardened in Blitz at the Calling Indianapolis, like 3 months after Worlds happened, the first World Championship happened, and then just kind of didn't like, it was like right after all the bannings of like Icelander got hit, Uldum got hit a little bit, and Fi got hit a little bit more with like the Blittle ban, and like couldn't really find a deck that I really enjoyed too much. And then I started, I was like, why don't I just play Kano and CC? And then became a traditional now Kano Coper, and played, you know, Kano almost, not exclusively for the last, like, almost year, but a lot of, definitely played a lot of Kano in the last year, and kind of known for it at this point. So, yeah.
Yeah. What's the Peter Budenset take on Kano in this metagame right now? Because obviously we got the rhetoric from week one, Kano's leading the pack, it's the Kano meta. Do you feel like he's actually very viable in this meta? And what conditions have led to that viability?
Yeah, I think Kano's actually like probably a top five deck in the meta right now. Like not even Copium, a lot of the time, but I think what made Kano is really good is the meta is like slowed down a significant amount, mm-hmm. and not even that is just slowed down a significant amount to where you're not having like Fi just kill you on turn two randomly, or like all these other explosive decks like Lexi, like really putting the pressure on you. But a lot of the decks that have become like part of the big majority of the meta right now, like the Guardians and the Warriors, they just kind of fold to Kano. They just like, even if they play a massive amount of AB or tech cards against you, you like, if they're playing AB1, AB2, they just kind of fold, even if they're playing Oasis. And if they just never put pressure on you, and you just can easily stack them out of the game, basically. I think this is probably the best meta for Kano since like PT1. And that's like, I don't think a bad take at all right now. I think a lot of people are with that statement.
And are you sort of in, do you have the ideology that people show up to PTLA and they're over tech for Kano? Because like, let's say Kano is a margin of the field, which it usually is, but people come prepared as if it was 20%. For you, is that like no factor in this metagame? You're like, okay, they can bring their Arcane Barrier, they can bring their Oasis, but it won't save them.
Those people won't make day two, so I'm not really scared of it. I think it's just like, if you're dedicating like 6 to 9 slots like specifically for Kano, which is like maybe 5% of the meta, like I doubt there's more than 15, maybe 20 Kano players in the entire like PT, right? Mm-hmm. So if you're teching 9 cards for one matchup, you're gonna lose so much equity in every other matchup that I don't think you're gonna make it like close to where you want to be to actually face the good Kano players in day two.
Mm-hmm. What other decks were you considering throughout the process, or even considering right now as you lead up to the PT that are not Kano?
Definitely been thinking about multiple of the brutes, actually. Like, I think KO is like super, super interesting. I think it's probably the de facto best deck in this format. Just like consistently of how it is, like RTN wins, popularity, like everything around that. It's just like such a consistent deck. Like, this is what I wanted Brute to be for so long, or it's just like you're consistently attacking with these big power multiple times a turn. Can have, you're not like just a Bulrush Bellow deck, you actually have a lot of different cards to enact different game plans. I think KO is really good. Levia has been super interesting. Mm-hmm. I just watched Man Sant like go undefeated in his RTN with like all like streaming the entire thing, and I was like, damn, Levia kind of real after watching that a little bit. And then I think Reinar is the, you know, the sneaky one. I know Hayden likes likes Reinar as well, but yeah, I think Reinar's like super sneaky right now and actually could be a sleeper.
Interesting. I haven't heard Hayden chirp about Reinar in a while. What do you think that
I haven't heard from you in a while, Brennan, so
what do you think Reinar offers that the other brutes don't?
You could like 3-shot people, basically. You could make it so you intimidate people enough to where they want to block. Mm-hmm. Like a lot of the decks right now want to block like pretty heavily, want to play a 2-2 game, maybe get value out of their weapons. And Reinar can just basically just like alpha rampage you for like 18 on a random turn, and then like just kind of pressure you that way. Also just like the consistency of Bloodrush Bellow, like intimidating a card coming in for 5/5 and then like maybe swing big for 10. Like you're going to take, you know, upwards of 10 damage like every time I do that. Mm-hmm. And then just like normal Reinhardt things, but everybody wants to block right now. So if you're the one character that is kind of eluding through that, I think it's really good.
Mm-hmm. For sure. Very, very interesting. I thought that I had let the Kano ship sail in mm-hmm. testing. I was like, okay, I don't want to play it into an Overtech meta, but you, Hayden, like multiple people are trying to get me to go back to my old ways. And I mean, I'm sold. I've got the deck. I've got a beautiful Kano deck. I love it. It's all ready to go. Very little upgrades. And it's a deck I'm very fond of. Like,
I don't even think it's about going back to the old ways, right? Like your old ways specifically. I think Kano is, you know, you're saying top five deck, Peter, and I don't yep. disagree. I also think if you look at potential meta spread, I mean, I think there's some shifts in what's happening through the Road to National season. I think people are learning more about decks, and it looks like, honestly, like Kano might just statistically be in a really good spot in terms of its matchup spread when we get to the PT. And I think I want to go back to a question you said there, which was something you said in response to Brent's question about sort of, hey, you were like, you know, is there going to be more than 20 Kanos? I think there might be more than 20 Kanos at this PT. Like, I think really? People, I think so. I think people who haven't traditionally landed on Kano are going to play Kano because I think it's actually a good choice in this meta. And I think this is something that I've only probably come to in the last few days. But when the more I look at it, the more I think people can land on this deck as a solid choice, as opposed to being like, well, it's the deck I know, I'm going to play it. I think, let's say, okay, I think it's hard to know what the top deck's going to be right now, but if you think Guardian's going to be anywhere from 15 to 25% of the meta, you think Warrior's going to be somewhere from 10 to 15%, even Brutes, like Brutes are not a bad matchup for Kano in particular. I think KO is a pretty reasonable matchup for Kano, like close to 50-50, if not Kano favored. All of a sudden, you're looking at like maybe 60, 70% of the meta is like matchups you want to play. Like that's an amazing spot to be in for the PT, even if people are packing their Oasises and taking on the Chins and their AB3. Like a lot of those decks can't use AB3, let alone, you know, have space to be able to put cards that randomly get discarded and don't have 6 power. So I don't know. I'm starting to believe that Kano might actually be a force in this PT, regardless of whether I want to play it or not.
Yeah. I said that there wasn't many upgrades to the deck. Are there any changes to the list? Because you did a deck tech with us prior to US Nationals. Have there been any major changes to the list outside of the new blue zero cost and potentially something like a Threadbare Tunic?
No, besides the 7th blue zap that we got, there's not really like...
17th. Not,
oh, yeah, yeah.
Power creep, baby.
Dude, we're definitely power creeping. I make a ponder now. Oh, man. Definitely Kano can use that, right? I can respond on my end step? No. But no, besides that, and then like Threadbare Tunic, which randomly became something that I was memeing for a while at the Realm games, to actually being a sideboard card that would be running right now if the PT was today. So it's like pretty, I don't think there's really much tech besides that. It's like what cards you want to play for Dromai. If you want to tech for the mirror right now, that's like something that I've been actually thinking about is mm-hmm. if I'm going to play against another Kano player, like how do you actually play the mirror correctly? And what does that mirror actually look like? Because that's like the one thing that I have not seen anybody talk about is like actually how the Kano mirror goes. And I don't think anybody has a concrete answer of how the mirror actually goes besides like random clips online where like people are just playing Kano mirrors. And like one person just does not know what to do and the other person has like a slight idea. So I think whoever figures that out, and if we actually get to a point to where Kano mirrors are a thing, that's going to be probably the edge on that part.
Mm. I can give you our anecdotal experience.
You don't like them?
I hate them too.
I love Kano mirrors. I actually think it's really good.
I can give you our anecdotal experience from Pro Tour number 1 in top mm-hmm. 8 because we were able to see Alexander Vorsdak and prepare for it the night before. Our original thought was like, oh, you should probably take out something like Aether Wildfire. Like that was just the initial theory. Like from pure theory mm-hmm. crafting, saying we're like, okay, we take out Aether Wildfire, we add things like Starforge for reach, etc. But all we found out was that Aether Wildfire was probably the most important card. And it felt like whoever sort of like moved first lost in that fight. It also... The reason why I hate Kano mirrors is it feels like it can be a bit high variance terms of...
There was a card called Waning Moon, though, Brendan, that wasn't around back then. Yeah. And I think that changes potentially the Kano mirror. I'm not sure it's actually clear.
Talk to me about how it changes it.
Well, I mean, if you play Waning Moon as opposed to Crucible, which I haven't played enough Kanemaru's recently, but I remember a time where it was like, that's not necessarily correct to 100% do that, especially if you think your opponent's going to play the Waning Moon plan. But the Waning Moon plan makes it a lot more grindy. It makes it a lot more, I think, a lot similar to what the Icelander mirror was, which is particularly why I don't like it. I hated that mirror so much. But I think it's, I just didn't think it was fun going past my turn with three cards in hand.
Yeah.
But honestly, that's why I think the Waning Moon Kanan mirror is kind of to a degree. And if one person's on Waning Moon and really understands the matchup and one person's on Crucible, I think it's really hard to understand whether the Waning Moon player is like ridiculously favored or whether the Crucible player will be able to find a window. And then if both players are on Waning Moon, I don't know. It kind of feels like an Icelander mirror to me, but I haven't played that mirror in like 12 to 18 months.
Okay, that makes sense. Yeah, I'm like probably on the other side of that take from my testing with like Majin. I think like the mirrors, like I think I've played like 40, 50 mirrors in the last like couple of weeks. And like my entire idea of the mirror has kind of changed over that time. And I think there is a correct choice of what you should be, like the weapon you do and like how it goes. And I've seen a lot of takes currently in like Kando chats that are like the exact opposite of what currently I think. So I'm really excited to see if like our like echo chamber is different than is better than the rest right now.
Yeah,
you guys are wizard sadists, though. So
that is true. That is true.
My experience of Kanemaru since PT1 has actually been playing as Peter, but we were playing a sort of degenerate format of Kanemaru, which was single deck. We're playing single deck Kanemaru. It wasn't necessarily Kanoker. So it was just literally we played off of a singular deck.
A single deck.
Yeah, because we were just chilling at the U.S. Nationals. Yeah, I mean, we'll see. I'm going to revisit it. It's something I want to land on, but I'm in the same boat as you, Peter, where the KO value prop is very appealing. You know, the thing that's least appealing to me is just that it is very mid-rangey deck, and I do think that out of every deck that could show up to the Pro Tour, it will probably have the largest target on its back. To what extent that is relevant, you know, whether the deck can be targeted in a meaningful way, I'm not sure, but I prefer to not be on those decks if the margin is close enough, right? If the margin is close enough where I could pick a different deck, then I would like to do that, but if it's overwhelming the best deck by a significant margin, then yeah, I'll probably end up on KO. What's been your experience with the Guardians? A lot of people are very high on Guardian in this metagame, both Bravo and I guess Victor. You know, like we talked about, Victor was kind of leading the Road to Nationals, the Road to Nationals pack, but you know, people since week one of this metagame have been talking about Bravo being better than Victor. What are your thoughts?
That's like that's the one I actually don't understand 100%. I know a lot of people talk about like the Bravo versus Victor matchup specifically. I've like traditionally thought it was like Bravo favored, but some people are saying it's like the opposite right now, but I don't really know. I haven't personally tested a lot of Guardian. I just, take into account what like trusted Guardian players have been saying right now and how when I see them late into like these RTN seasons. And I think they're really good right now. I think a lot of people are like overestimating like their downfall at some points, but I think like as you can see, like Victor's like what, one of the top three like most winning in the first 2 weeks of the RTN season, right? Like winning like 5 1 week and then like 2 another week is like one thing versus I think it won like 7 1 week and then like, is it 10 or is it like 5 another week or something like that? And I think the stats on there, and then Bravo also has incredible stats, like just as a normal mid-range deck. I think both of them are really good right now. And I think we're going to see a decent amount of both of them, like around like 10-15% almost for both of them at the PT if it keeps angling this way.
I'll field this question to both of you. Where do you think your Mai lands in this metagame right now?
You go first, Peter.
I think Dromai is a top 5 deck. Mm-hmm. I have it in a top 5 right now. I think if I have trust in one Copium players, it's definitely the Dromai Copium. Because like no matter what format comes out of it, they'll try to figure that out until they die. And most people are like, I think that the KO matchup is pretty bad for Dromai. But I think somebody will figure that matchup out of how to actually play it from a Dromai perspective. And yeah, I think it's a good deck right now. But I don't know how many people are going to be completely on it by the PT.
Oh, this is a great question. I think So my view is that KO is a good matchup for Dromai.
Oh, oh,
and yeah. I'm definitely not a Dromai, what do you call him? Cope, Stan, whatever.
Copium.
Like, I don't like Dromai because I hate Tome of the Imperial Flame. I wish that card was never printed. I used to be a main Dromai enjoyer. I used to love me some Dromai, and then they went and printed a card that makes that hero boring in my view, but whatever. I think KO is a pretty solid matchup for Dromai. I think KO really struggles with dealing with onboard threats because you have one arm. You literally are playing with one arm tied behind your back as KO, and I think it's quite hard to consistently deal with those while being able to output enough damage to take over the game and win in the early game, which is what I think Brutes need to do into Dromai. But that being said, right, like that might just be my experience of playing a ton of Dromai into Brutes, and maybe that's a little bit lopsided. Maybe I need to play more of the other side. I think the big question for Dromai in terms of how big it's going to show up is the Guardian matchup. I think that is the one that's always been the 90-90 matchup, right? Like,
yeah,
people will seem to have such polarizing views on the Guardian matchup, and I still don't know what side of that matchup I would rather be on. I think it changes based on what cards people are playing at the time, kind of what's meta for the Guardians to look like, how much Dromai's can dedicate to that matchup versus having to worry about other decks in the format. I think with Icelander gone, I think that frees up some spots for Dromai to maybe be a little more concentrated on Guardian if that's the right decision. And if Guardian's going to be, you know, close to 20-25% of the meta, which I think it easily could be, what, you know, if you're a Dromai player, you have to feel like you've got a good Guardian matchup, I think, to want to play Dromai at this event. And I think that's what it's going to come down to. I think there could be a, you know, 5 to maybe even as much as 10% of people who are sat there thinking Dromai is a good pick, and then they're literally hanging on. Their decision hinges solely on, is my Guardian matchup good or not? Yes, I play the deck. No, I play another deck. And I think that's where we could end up. I do think Dromai is a top, definitely top 5, maybe even top 3 deck in the format, and could be the best choice for this event, but that's predicated on feeling like you have a good Guardian matchup and a good KO matchup. So,
yeah, it only got worse, right, with the additional blue sixes. So I think that Hayden's correct that you have to be confident into that Guardian matchup, but I can't imagine that the Guardian matchup got any better with the addition of Victor and the addition of the new blue six cards. Yeah, Guardian is very polarizing. Peter, I think you're actually a great person to talk to this about the Dromai versus Guardian matchup, because in Barcelona, I don't know if I've mentioned you by name in the past, but I've definitely talked about the story where Sasha and I were grinding a lot of Bravo into Dromai before Peter arrived in Spain. And we had pretty much deduced that Dromai was what seemed to be 100-0 into Fatigue, if it came prepared. There could be some extreme outlier of variance where maybe, you know, the Bravo's first cycle cards came in a really bad way. Or sorry, the Dromai's cards came in a really bad way and Bravo could somehow fatigue them out. But it seemed like 100-0. And then our hero came in the form of Peter, and he fatigued our Dromai deck. He absolutely fatigued our Dromai deck. It was a very close match, and I don't know if it would have repeated itself, but like you definitely had a level of mastery over fatigue, you know, that matchup, being on the Bravo side and being able to fatigue the Dromai. It was really impressive.
Yeah, it was pretty interesting, because going into, I credit from like going into PT3, I was like playing Uldum for like, I think I put an insane amount of hours into Uldum going into PT3, because that's what like my team thought it was going to be, like the best deck in that format, which turned out Uldum was not the best deck in that format, but you know, still won the Pro Tour, so it was perfectly fine. But I played a lot of Fatigue. Like, I was playing dedicated Fatigue at that tournament, and through playing Dromai and like countless hours of playing versus like straight like Fatigue versus Fatigue, like Fatigue Dromai versus Fatigue Uldum, that's like the only way I know how to actually know how to play the matchup. Like, I think Guardians, I don't know how people like aggro Dromai and not just like lose the game randomly in like 1 to 2 turns versus like trying to fatigue gives you a lot higher of a chance.
Oh, do you still believe that in the current iterations of the deck leading into PTLA? Do you think that the Guardians implementing a fatigue game plan versus Dromai is a higher win percentage over going aggressive?
From my testing, I've always thought that the fatigue route is like the better route. Mm-hmm. And in this meta, like, I've only played like maybe like 15 games of like Bravo versus Dromai, because like people ask me like from our testing to play Dromai into it, and like I fatigued every single time, and I definitely have a better win rate than just trying to like aggro them for a cycle.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that is very contrarian. Like, that is
I love Flesh and Blood.
Yeah.
Direct opposite of my experience.
Yeah.
Same with me. I would have said direct opposite of my experience if Peter had not showed up to the testing house of Barcelona and fatigued Sasha on Dromai that one day. It looked like a match that it would have been tough for you to repeat and consistently fatigue, but nevertheless, like, I would have confidently said that it was borderline 100-0, and you changed my mind on that. So if I'm going to trust anybody, it's you. But there is a true dichotomy. People can timestamp that one when it comes to the Dromai Bravo matchup. That's fascinating. Hayden, you're on the Dromai side. I know you think that fatigue is a very favorable strategy for you as Dromai. Just talk to me about why that is, why you would prefer to play against a Guardian player fatiguing you rather than one that's trying to aggro you down. Because the first cycle aggro down is relatively high variance, right?
Honestly, I'm not sure I want to play against any Guardian. Is kind of the problem I think I have with Dromai right now, I think. But I guess in my experience, I think particularly kind of post-Ultim, I would say like pre-Tome. So what are we talking? Like post-Outsiders, but before Bright Lights. I felt like kind of the default plan was to fatigue. So I would say most Dromais, or I guess at least us for Nationals, we were really set up for that matchup. Like we understood what we wanted to have. We had like time snap potion. We had, the Mage Master boots plan. Like we had extra like fatigue plans, I guess, like ghostly fatigue plans, triple remembrance, mm-hmm. whatever it was.
Yep.
And actually what was scariest to me was when people just CNC pummeled you, because the value on CNC pummeling in Stromae is so high, it's disgusting. And I think majority of fatigue players either weren't playing their pummels or they were blocking with them and getting two value out of them, which is, you know, much more exciting to me. So I honestly think it's just kind of been a moment in time and dependent on both what the Dromais think that the Guardians are going to do and then what the Guardians actually do. I guess the Guardians kind of have the upper hand because Dromai has to play the game that the Guardians decide to play, not the other way around. And I think that's what is as tough as Dromai and almost any meta that Dromai's been in, is that you kind of have to adapt to what your opponent's doing. Actually, I want to ask Peter about that in terms of Kano soon, because I think Kano's similar. Like, you have to play the way that your opponent wants to play, not the other way around. And I think that's kind of been what's been tough about the Dromai Guardian matchup. But yeah, I think my experience has been, especially when Dromai's have set up for that, that fatigue is pretty good for you. And then on the flip side of it, although I don't know now with the extra six, and then on the flip side of it, in terms of that aggressive plan, like, you know, one CNC pummel or like two back-to-back turns of like good rouse pressure when you don't have like a dragon up that they have to clear is like really hard to deal with, I think, especially if you can't develop Ash early, like if you don't see a tome or whatever. So I think, yeah, there's Guardian variance in terms of how they draw their first cycle if they try and be proactive and pressure you. But there's also Dromai. How your first cycle lines up as well can be just the same thing. You know, if you don't line up dragons that they need to kill, or that are must kills on the board, for instance, I think that's tougher. So I don't know. It's Flesh and Blood, right? Like everyone's got different opinions, everyone's got different experiences because people play differently, people present different decks.
So. Yeah, and then the Wolf Pack shows up with Bravo to the World Championship. before we dive into the intricacies, more into the intricacies of Kano, is there any other decks that you want to talk about or mention, Peter, that are either dark horses or particularly high on your list that you think might not be high on other people's lists?
A deck that's actually like super high on my list is Katsu. I think that's like a lot of the decks I've seen from Katsu, I think they're like completely like building the deck like fundamentally wrong. But I think that deck has like the most high potential out of any deck if it could be solved in time. Mm-hmm. I don't think for this specific PT, there might be like one group of players that might be close to solving that deck. But I think like we'll see Katsu in like a month and be like, yo, this was actually the diamond in the rough, if anything.
Okay, talk to me a little. So you don't have to, like you said, it isn't solved yet, but talk to me a little bit about the ideological direction of where you would take that deck versus sort of like the common accepted Katsu build right now. Like, what are some of the ideas that are sort of you're tossing around for like what is a better version of Katsu?
Yeah, I think a lot of people right now are like playing dedicated like Mask of the Pouncing Lynx. And they're playing in like most matchup besides like Momentum versus like Dromai. Mm-hmm. I think that's like probably the opposite of what I would take the deck currently. I think you can basically have a like setup combo like game plan with like the new Ancestral card with playing like Flick Flax and like just trying to set up more than like you could almost second cycle like your combo with like Katsu right now is like what I've been like theorizing.
Mm-hmm. What, in terms, sorry, you just reminded me because of Ninja Turtle. Do you think that there's any viability to dedicated fatigue decks outside of Guardian? You know, Guardian's more of a game plan, but dedicated fatigue decks outside of Guardian that are willing to give up, you know, massive equity in some other matchups, you know, take a 0%er on some expected metagame matchups in order to try to fatigue decks like KO. I think what things that come to mind are like Tree Frog Dash, Tekla Vossen, things like that, maybe even Ninja Turtle. Do you think there's any viability to those decks leading up to the PT?
I think there's a little bit, right? Like, I don't know how, like, Kasai is pretty good right now. Mm-hmm. I don't know how, like, that matchup specifically goes, because if I'm playing a more fatigue strategy and I'm playing against, like, mono attack reactions, like, doesn't seem like the best thing for me personally. But I think, yeah, like, Slab Dash or something like that is, like, the only, would be the only other, like, dedicated fatigue deck that I would be thinking of playing currently. Yeah. If I wanted to go that strategy, I don't think there's like too much of a, I don't think that archetype is like necessarily like exponentially good right now. But I definitely could see a couple people like want to play that, at the PT, but not a lot of people.
Yeah. I think from our testing, we were looking at Tree Frog. I mean, we're looking at all kinds of fatigue decks, but Tree Frog Dash is just like, even if you're willing to take the really bad matchups in some of the more niche metagame that might show up, if you're trying to fatigue Brute, they just kind of inherently have this like item destruction potential in the board. And it's like, that kind of sucks. That kind of sucks. Like, even if you could fatigue them, it's not ideal. So, yeah. Give me a little bit of a snippet on the current state of Kasai and where you think she lands right now.
I think Kasai has a lot of auto losses in them, in like the current meta right now. Like, Dromai is really bad, Kano's extremely bad, like, but if you get past those two, I think it actually is a really, really good deck. Like, it's a very good point goblin deck, and has like an incredible amount of like armor, and then that like actually has a recursive armor through like the Valiant Daimons, right? So I think that deck is like really good. I think Pwnkash had a good like deck list and like explanation of like not playing Hot Streak and like other stuff like that in like that deck. And I don't think the Dromai matchup's like unlosable, but it's like quite bad. But I think that deck will probably surprise people that are not ready for it, or if you're like locals aren't playing it, or if you're not testing it directly, because you're playing almost a fatigue strategy, but you're playing like that mid-range fatigue to where you go second cycle pretty much every single game. And, you know, if you can pitch stack into like Blood in Their Hands and like whatever, is it Raisin Army? Yeah, Raisin Army, yeah. From the Kasai side.
Interesting. Hayden, I want to pass over to you as we expand more into Kano and give you a chance to ask some of these questions you have listed.
So many questions. No, I want to go into something I was alluding to earlier, Peter, which is I was talking about kind of, I guess, agency. And through the lens, I guess, more so of the Dromai matchup and being sort of dictated by how your opponent's going to play. And I really feel that that's kind of how Kano has to operate as well. I'd love to hear your thoughts. But, you know, I think, do you feel like, because to me it feels like Kano's kind of straightforward in terms of the way it has to play the game. I'm not saying it's a straightforward hero to play, I'm not saying that it's easy to play, but in terms of your opponent sits down, they decide that they're going to either pressure you with, you know, AB3 and they're going to attack you, or they're going to try and sit up turns and prevent damage, or they're going to be really protective about their blues so that you can't combo them or whatever. Like, they're going to kind of dictate the flow of the game. Do you think that's mostly true? Or do you think Kano kind of has the ability to dictate games?
I think most of the time through the first like 3 to 5 turns, I'm like basically trying to read what my opponent is like trying to do in the entire game, right? I think some matchups specifically, you can go into and be like I'm doing this specific thing every single time, no matter what. But a lot of the time, like right now, because it's like so open, like so many people have so many ideas that, you know, you play so many Bravo players, which is like a good matchup. But like, you know, you're probably in of 10 players, you're probably playing 4 different strategies into Kano. And like, it just really depends. Yeah, I'm really trying to feel people out usually for the first couple of turns until like I know what they're trying to do, and then try to punish them through that.
I'm just gonna list a couple of questions, Brendan, if you don't mind. I've got a few more that I want to run past Peter. Are hate cards actually that impactful versus Kano? AB3, if people don't have good pressure, is that even relevant? Oasis, take it on the chin, spell void, like how relevant is actually the potential of people bringing hate cards?
um i think it's only relevant if you can put a real clock on them. If you can't play, like, Bravo isn't going to put a relevant clock onto Kano, so him playing, like, Steadfast or Oasis isn't going to do anything. Same thing with Victor. Like, if you're just trying to turtle, play, like, AB3 plus, and you, like, send one, like, one Oasis or, like, one Steadfast out of card, that Kano is just immediately going to pitch deck you into Oblivion, right? Or they should, right? Like, I think unless you have, like, dedicated pressure, you can't just sit behind these dedicated heart cards the entire game.
Yeah, do you think part of that pressure, like, I look at something like Dash, right? And Dash is traditionally a pretty tough matchup for Kano because they have pressure, plus they have excess resources, and they can also put pressure on you at the start of a turn without expending a lot of resources. Whereas, like, Bravo, you know, Bravo can put pressure on, but it has to put all its resources up front, generally, to be able to do it.
Yeah. Bravo's, like, pretty face-up, right? Like, you know what they're going to do basically their entire turn cycle, like, the first card they play, which is, like, the difference. The Dash is just, like, always going to be probably your worst matchup, like, one of your worst matchups in the game, because, like, even when they sound, they just start, like, Tackle Pounder, and they're just like, all right, Bottleful 8, I have one floating three cards in hand, and you're just like, well, that's, like, basically a third of my life, you know? So, you're just, yeah, that one's just, like, the resource economy of, like, that deck and, like, the amount of pressure it can have. And they get to play AB3 and have a significant amount of blues to actually, like, pitch to AB3 almost every single turn is just, yeah, you're never getting back from it.
Yeah. Waning Moon. I want to ask you about Waning Moon. Is there a world where it's correct to play Waning Moon into more matchups than just the Wizard matchup?
Currently, there's three matchups I play Waning Moon in, so yes. I think it is very specific, but I don't think Waning Moon is, like, going to be one of those decks where you're, like, you're always going to play. If nobody played AB, I think Waning Moon is actually correct over Crucible in, like, those type of metagames, but right now, like, I think half the metagame is going to be playing, like, a significant amount of, like, AB or trying to play that amount of AB to, like, have a chance of beating Kano, so no, I'm a Crucible gamer unless very specific circumstances happen.
Were you a Waning Moon gamer in Blitz? Because that's what converted me to just how powerful that weapon is.
Okay, I was the opposite. Crucible. I hated Waning Moon in Blitz. People kept trying to have that argument with me, and I'm like, you're just losing. You lose? I think you gain 3 damage on, like, one turn in Blitz, but you lost, like, 5 to 6 points of value throughout the game. And I'm like,
only one turn anyway.
Okay. Okay. But, yeah. I think, like, yeah, I don't know. That argument never made sense to me, because if I just live 3 turns, I have the exact value. So the only time we don't have the same amount of value is if it's less than 3 turns, right? Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
Yep. Last one from me. Brainstorm combo. Is it playable, and can it ever be good?
Do I think it's playable? No, not at all, right? I think I have thought about playing Brainstorm in, like, an actual traditional, like, Kato list, and then just, like, pitch stacking, like, 6 tomes, but I keep getting talked out of it. But no, I don't. I think you just die. Like, even playing against, like, Guardians that, like, usually don't have enough pressure to, like, for normal Kano, like, I don't know, your deck's, like, 20 items, right? Like, just 20 non-blocks, so they send an 8, and, like, a lot of the time you're just, like, taking 5, and you're just, like, and you also don't do anything, right? You just, like, play an item pass. So you're not pressuring anybody, and so they just have, like, 4 or 5 card hands. But I think that deck is actually sweet, and I wish they would explore that more often or not than not in the future.
I want more combos in Flesh and Blood.
Like, I do.
I mean, they neutered the game of all the other combos, I feel like, at this point. I guess Lumina still exists, but I thought the Viscerai combo was very elegant. It might have been a little bit powerful.
Nitromechanoid?
Yeah.
Viscerai combo is still there, dude. There's still a Viscerai combo. I don't know if you're aware. It's called Looming Doom.
It's not the same at all.
Not the same. Yeah, no, I was a very big... I was a very big enjoyer of Viscerai combo before, like, Skeletor got banned. And yeah. I actually, like... I think people complain about combo decks a little bit too much, to where, like, you need to have that playstyle in games, right? Like, some people will only play a game if there's that kind of approach to the game, to where you can play that kind of, like control playstyle. Like, you get better the longer the game goes. But if you just... That is the most I've ever had people, like, hate on, like, an archetype and, like, basically any game that I play, like, it happens in Magic all the time as well. Like, any time that a combo deck is good, everybody just complains about it. Like, there's not, like, dedicated cards that they always printed to make this deck, like, bad. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah. Viscerai combo, I remember back in the early days when we were trying to solve that deck in Blitz, and even CC to an extent, I just remember going through some of the lines where we would actually put hands face up on the table and figure out kills on turns where it wasn't immediately clear, and it would take sometimes 10 to 15 minutes for multiple high-level players like Pro Tour champions, Pro Tour top eighters to figure that line out, and it was just like, it was such an elegant, interesting deck. Unfortunately, the volume knob was just a little bit too high, where, yeah, it just smoked everyone. It just smoked everyone. You could not take the, you know, you could not take the sort of hard to see line. You would still kind of beat people.
Yeah, this is broken.
Yeah, it was pretty good, but I do miss it. I'm very fond of it. So in terms of Kano, are there any innovations to the deck, even from a theory standpoint, or is it just the same old thing? And I mean this in sort of every aspect, not only the cards you're including, of course, Aether Wildfire, but also in terms of ratios, like are you siding into different blue ratios into different matchups, or you might be more of a dog? How is your deck kind of changing when you're expecting your opponent to potentially be on Oasis or Spite, or is it simply a game plan change? Like, has there been any innovations to the Kano deck at this point?
I think there's a little bit of innovation, right? Mm-hmm. Like, I think, like, because of how, like, formats change, like, also every deck in that format should change, like, trying to change accordingly, right? Especially, like, I talked to Julian a lot. He won a Battle Hardened in I think it was Orlando on Kano, and it was the XO run, and he is, like, obsessed with pitch decking. Like, basically everybody. Like, I asked him, like, what matchups he pitch decks, and it's like more than half the metagame currently. And I was like, that's actually wild, because like all these characters I just try to blow up for a cycle. So I think there's a lot of ideology differences between like a lot of the different players right now. Mm-hmm. I definitely approach a lot of the matchups currently differently than I did at the start of this meta, right? Like, I played KO against KO very differently than my first like 20 games versus it. And I think sometimes you have to like evolve your own strategy and try to play the worst cards that to actually find like the better cards and matchups, right? Like, that was the Threadbore Tuning thing. Like, it was a meme, and then now it's like it's actually better than Spellfire Cloak. So in like specific scenarios, and I think finding those like 1%ers or like 2%ers is going to like make the Kano deck or break the Kano deck.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Can you explain that one, actually? Why is Threadbore Tunic better than Spellfire Cloak now? Why are people opting for that?
Yeah, so Spellfire Cloak says you can only activate it on your opponent's turn, versus Threadbore Tunic, you have to have zero cards in your hand to activate it, but you can activate it on both turns. So a lot of the time now, if you're playing Threadbore Tunic, which you would most of the time play versus like Dromai and Fi, a lot of the time what people have found is you'll have almost a kill on your own turn. Like, you could do some like fancy like red Aether Flare, or like you can do twice off the top, hit double two cost, and then want to play Blazing from Arsenal, and you'd just be like one resource short off of just like without an E-Pod or anything like that. Threadbore Tunic allows you to, you know, have that extra resource to, you know, to have that extra node or something like that to just like have the lethal on your turn, or do like 20 some damage on a turn where you would only do like 13, you would do like almost 26 damage instead, which is quite insane. I think it's just the flexibility of being able to play on both turns, which is the difference between Threadbore versus Spellfire Cloak.
Makes sense. All right. Well, I mean, for me, that concludes pretty much everything I need to know about Kano. I really do want to play the deck. And it comes down to, ultimately, I think when Sasha comes to Texas, like, we just have to figure out how large the gap is between KO and Kano. The title of this episode, by the way, is going to be Locked on KA Star O for PT, because, well, let's be real. But that's where I'm at. It's between those two decks, and I don't want to play KO. Hayden said going back to my old ways earlier. Like, honestly, I haven't played Kano in any...
You said that, not me.
I know, but you
said that.
You alluded that I played it in bad metas. I've only played it in one, maybe, debatably, which is U.S. Nationals. Other than that, I haven't forced it.
Wait, you're talking about
much.
The U.S. Nationals that we both played Kano in?
Yeah, I don't think it was
bad.
Wait,
that matchup was so good before.
I think the Icelander was rough. Even with the tech actions.
How'd you guys go? How'd you guys go?
I went 2-1 in CC, and then I went 1-2 in draft when I dropped.
I top 16 the calling.
Yeah, yeah.
I went 2-2, and then top 16 the calling the next day, losing like a very like I was one damage off of killing Lexi to top 8. That
I thought you could have won that match too when I was looking behind, but my memory is like infinitely worse than yours. Like I watched that entire match, but Peter has nobody. Most people don't know this, but I think that there's a lot of people like the I pitch stack and yeah they like to they talk a big game and Peter actually has like a photographic memory, which is kind of annoying.
Yeah, I think I could have won that match too. I think I threw like I think there was two moments where I lost a damage, which both of them would have won, but. No, that matchup was super close. Like, I definitely wanted that was like probably one of the games that I think I played like 95% optimally. And if I was just like 1% better on that day, like you just saw like a Kano top 8 a calling that like I think there was like 4 Kanos at that event as yep. well, and you just saw like a Kano top 8, and I would just be like, here we are. Like Kano's actually good. So
I think that we added attack actions in our Kano deck, TLDR.
Yes.
I think that it increased our equity in the Icelander matchup significantly, but I do think that it suffered from traditional Wounded Bull variants, which is first cycle, your Wounded Bulls clump and your opponents don't, and whoever's don't, they have significant tempo over the opponent, and it makes it really hard to come back.
I played against an Icelander in D2 that called like that US national calling. And I think it was like the third to last round of mm-hmm. day 2. And I think I won at like 31.
Yeah.
I think I played like Yellow Tome from Arsenal and then played like Wounded Bull, hit it right off the top like half the turns in a row. And my opponent literally conceded because I had like lethal, like I just like showed my hand and I was like, which way do you want to die on like turn 4 of the game? And yeah, it was like, I don't know. I felt like that matchup was like really lopsided once you played 50 games of like Wounded Bull Kano versus like Wounded Bull Icelander.
Yeah. I felt like I drew, like I only played one. I beat one Icelander in round 1 and mm-hmm. then the Icelander played in round 3. I felt like I, maybe I'm giving too much credence to this, but I felt like I drew what I would consider to be the hand of death, which is 4 attack actions, 4 red attack actions. It was not great. It was not great. Cause I also had a frostbite, so I couldn't play a single one, by the way. So it's like, I was like, pass. Shit. I got owned.
Oh, no.
Then I got owned. Anyway, Peter, I want to give you a chance to shout out where people can find you, what you're up to, any content you're doing, etc.
Yeah, follow me on Twitter and on YouTube. I do a lot of basically like top 8 breakdowns on my YouTube channel. I sometimes don't like the commentary on like a lot of the top 8s. Like they don't go into incredible detail of like how the matchups work, and I kind of break it down a little bit deeper on my channel of like multiple top 8s, usually like Callings and Battle Hardens and the AGE events that happen in California. I just do my own commentary over them on my channel. So if you want more in-depth breakdowns of top 8s, go to Massive Momentum on YouTube. And if you want to hear me shitpost and Copium Kano on Twitter, go to Massive Momentum on Twitter as well.
Awesome. We appreciate you coming on the podcast. I really think that it's interesting because I met you very early in your Flesh and Blood life cycle. I do think that you've grown into being one of the brightest minds in the game and probably one of the most technical players at that, which might be attributed to that little gift you have with remembering things. But I'm really impressed on how you've grown as a player because not only did you whoop my ass in CC when we were in Barcelona, or you whooped Sasha, so it was via proxy. In draft, you were a menace. Both you and Majin were freaking menace. Genesis and Bright Light Draft. It was
I love draft. I think draft is super super high level, and can't wait to do more drafts, like especially in I get like 9 a.m on Dallas on that weekend, so can't wait to get some drafts up with the boys.
I talked to you about that after this, actually. I have a pitch for Dallas. Anyway, thank you. We'll close it out from here. If you're enjoying the podcast, the number one thing you can do is leave us a review on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. It helps so much, and we read every single review. If you want to help us keep the lights on, you want to help us put on food on the table, go to youtube.com/arsenalpass and hit that subscribe button. We need it. And then finally, Twitter's at BrendanAPG, fan_Dale, and at Mask Momentum. Thank you all so much to the Arsenal Pass patrons. You help us do what we do. I'll see you next week.